right, welcome to this week's episode of Double Line Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Just after the close here, April 19th. Those of you listening on these spaces, I titled it Allergy Season. Sam, you and I are both struggling from our allergies this week. I don't know what it is, whether it's just the wind or the rain or a combination of both, but it's been a pretty big struggle here.
Yeah, either way, whatever the cause, it sucks.
Yeah, and hopefully, Jason, hopefully your kid's feeling a little bit better today after being at the doctor for allergies.
Yeah, that's pretty bad stuff there. Okay.
All right, Sam, why don't we kick it off for where are we for the week?
Yeah, with that big sniffle to kick us off here. Let's look at the S&P 500 to start, and actually just checking out the ag here, another one of those weeks where traditional assets are down. S&P 500 on the week to date down just over 3% on the week to date. Month-to-date down over about 5.5%, and year-to-date up 4.5%. And when looking across the best and worst performers here is something I can't even remember the last time I said this, if I've ever said it before, but utilities the best performer on the week-to-date basis, up 1.9%. That's closely followed by consumer staples, up 1.4%. And then you have two other sectors in the green this week, financials up 0.8%, and healthcare pretty much flat, but with a positive sign there of 2 basis points positive there. The remaining 7 sectors of the S&P 500 are red and red color and negative sign there. But really, the one sector that got beat down this week was technology, down over 6% on the week-to-date basis. Consumer discretionary down 4%. And you know, those two sectors are the ones that contain a good share of the Magnificent Seven, or what used to be the Magnificent Seven, now the Fabulous Five, have two of them. That's two of those names. Apple and Tesla have kind of dropped out of that Magnificent Seven moniker as they, on the year-to-date basis at least, as those are both pretty significantly underperforming just even the broad S&P 500 as well. When I looked through it yesterday, unless there's a big shift in performance today, which I'm not sure, but I doubt, but those were down in the negative prints for those two stocks there. But
well, Sam, why didn't you tell us that at the beginning of the year? You know,
Exactly. I should have, given the hindsight portfolio is always a little bit easier than the foresight portfolio, right? So, but looking across that, pretty dismal week across the board for the S&P 500, still holding on to this 4.6% year-to-date return positive. But when I take a look at this track record, the trend is not our friend right here. The S&P 500 was down, looks like every day this week, down about 90 basis points just today alone. But every day this week had a negative sign in front of it. And in fact, on a month-to-date basis, as I said that it was down about 5.5% on the month-to-date basis. Every week this month, the S&P 500 has been down as well. So that makes it tough to have a positive print for either the weekend or month-to-dates. The bond's not really faring much better, however, this week. Looking at it, let's start with the two-year Treasury note. Held on to it, this kind of four-handle yield. It's at 4.98 on the close. It really has moved quite a bit since the December, December 2023, this year, it's just been almost just a straight path up on the 2-year Treasury note. I'm just looking at the intraday, wiggles and jiggles through year to date, and it looks like this 5% yield has been the resistance point, upper movement for the yield there. But if it does manage to breach that 5% mark, it looks like there's a lot of air. There's a little bit of an air pocket there on the short term look. 520 looks to be the next point there, and even 4.5 and a quarter, as that was the high print that we've seen in the cycle that was touched on last October of 2023. So it looks like it's been, in the month of April thus far, it looks like it's been trying to push up above that 5% and hasn't quite nailed it on the close yet, if my eyes aren't tricking me here. But it has pressed up against it a couple times this month already, so we'll see if it manages to break that 5%, and if it does, if it makes its way up to that 5.25. And as Gundlach likes to say a lot of times, the Fed doesn't even need, we don't need the Fed, we can just use the 2-year. So I mean, that's just really indicative of how the market is thinking about it through the Treasury market, at least, in terms of what the path of future rate policy will be. And it's definitely seems like they've come back from that path of the narrative where we're earlier this year pricing in six cuts and six quarter point cuts in Fed cuts based on Fed fund futures. Now it's kind of backing off. And I think, you know, we were talking about yesterday, it's barely even pricing in two at this point, but that's surely the 2-year treasury note is the yield there is kind of indicative of confirming that as well. When we take a look at the 10-year treasury note, the yield on there closed today with a yield of 4.62. That's 10 basis points higher than where it closed last Friday. And then the 30-year bond has a yield of 4.72 at the close, up 9 basis points in yield relative to last Friday there. So looking at, as as we've been doing for the last few weeks here, just on a year-to-date basis, you know, I like bringing it up just because it's a little eye-popping, but the 2-year treasury and the 10-year treasury yields are up about 0.75% on the year-to-date basis, and the 30-year bond is up 69 basis points year-to-date in yield. So what that means for the Bloomberg aggregate, starting with the week-to-date basis, that's down 60 basis points on the week, down 2.3% on the month-to-date basis, and down 3% on the year. And similar to the S&P 500, the ag has also been down every week this year. It's been down every week this month. You know, these allergies are not only affecting my breathing, but also my making my mind a little muddy here. So yeah, every week it has been down for the ag. But it's almost a clean sweep across the cohort of sectors that we look at, with bank loans the only positive performer, up about 10 basis points week to date. It's also still the best performer on the year-to-date basis, and now it's the only positive performer on the year-to-date basis, up 1.6%. Looking across the board for the remainder on the week, the worst performing sector is the investment-grade corporate credit market, down 1% on the week-to-date. That's followed closely by the agency mortgage-backed securities market, down 85 basis points. EM and high-yield corporate credit, EM sovereign debt and high-yield corporate credit are both down 0.5%, and U.S. Treasuries down 40 basis points. So definitely a lot of weakness there across the fixed income market. Moving over to the commodity market, the Bloomberg Commodity Index continues to kind of offer a sanctuary in this bad month for financial assets. It has opposite of what I've said with the S&P 500 and the Bloomberg Aggregate. The Bloomberg Commodity Index has been positive every week this month. This week, it's up 0.25%. On the month-to-date basis, it's a positive 4%. And the year-to-date number is a positive 6.2%. So commodities kind of making a little bit of a rebound after a tough start to 2024 here. And just in terms of some of the key commodities that we'd like to look at here, it looks like WTI front month futures for crude oil ended the week just over $83. It's at $83.22 a barrel of crude, despite being down nearly 3% on the week-to-date basis. So it looks like it's struggling to kind of maintain this $80 handle on the price level, despite some of the geopolitical risks that seem to be ever-present thus far in 2024. Particularly as it pertains to the energy market and the crude oil market there. But on a month-to-date basis, it's pretty much flat, just up 6 basis points from what I can see right now. On the year-to-date basis, the front-month future on crude oil for the WTI is up over 16%. And then gold, the hot commodity also for this year, also up about 16% on the year-to-date basis. But for that, I'll go ahead and give it the round.
Wondering if you're going to give it the round or not.
Yeah, give it 20 basis or 20 cent round here to get to a clean 2,400 a troy ounce for the front month future of gold. That's up 1.9% on the week to date basis, up just over 8% for the quarter. And as I mentioned earlier, it's neck and neck there with WTI crude oil for 16% on positive return for both of those commodities there. But with that wrap up, Jeff, do you want to kick us off on what happened in Macroland?
It was a pretty quiet week this week. On Monday, we did get retail sales numbers. The advanced month over month number for March came in. It was at 0.7 versus a 0.4 estimate. So a much stronger print there, down slightly from the prior month of 0.9. If you take off X autos and gas, that was up 1%. Was actually expected to be a positive 0.3, so a big beat there. And then the so-called control group came in at 1.1% versus a 0.4% estimate. So pretty strong across the board. All the prior months actually were revised up more. It's been pretty volatile in terms of your retail sales number, but it's still trending in the positive direction. Consumer remains strong from that. We look at also, we got the Beige Book on Wednesday. It just says overall economic activity extended very slightly since February. Kind of 10 out of the 12 districts experienced either slight or modest economic growth. So for some good news there also. And then on Thursday, we did get the initial and continuing jobless claims. The initial claims came in at 212,000. That was slightly below the 215,000 estimate and spot on, right in line with the last week's print of also 212,000. Continuing claims came in at 1.812 million, was expected to be 1.818, so we'll call that spot on there again. Also, actually was 1.810 last month, so just a slight increase there on the continuing claims side of things. As you would expect, given that no movement, the kind of longer term averages, we take a one month average, 4 week moving average of initial claims is unchanged. And the continuing claims is up slightly to 1.805 million from 1.801. So that is a very small change there. And then on Thursday, we also got the leading economic index, but called LEI. They came in at a negative 0.3, was expected to be a negative 0.1. So a little bit weaker there. And the prior month was revised, or it was weaker than the prior month, which was a positive 0.2. What's interesting, that brings the year-over-year number to negative 5.5. That's a better number, a less negative number than the negative 6.4 that we did get last month. It's interesting, though, that, and I was looking to see, I think it was Mark Kimbrough and I did a podcast back on, it was sometime in February, looks like February 23rd, talking about the LEI print from two times ago, when they were talking about how there's no recession on the horizon because 6 out of the 10 indicators in the index were positive. And we kind of joked then about how they're kind of changing the goalposts and that we'd never really heard of this, what they were referring to as a diffusion index of the LEI. We always took it as if it's below zero, sign of a recession. Again, this month, since there is no recession again, they kind of changed the goalposts again, and they said that it's not really the absolute year-over-year number that really you want to look at. It's a combination of two things: the diffusion. So because there's 10 indicators, so if more than half of them are weakening, then they would say that that's a diffusion of less than 50, and that would really mean most components are weakening, and that would be a sign signal one half of the signal for a recession. And also that the decline has to be over the last 6 months has to be below a negative 4.4%. Interestingly, if you look at where we are today, I think Mark put in here that we're at negative 4.3%. So slightly above that level that they mysteriously chose as the indicator level of when they want it to be a recession signal. So we're kind of still in a warning. According to the new adjusted goalposts here from the conference board. But really, when you look at it, we still think, let's not change it. Let's kind of see how things work out. I'm still in the, if it's below zero, signs of a recession, none of this newfangled back-tested data to kind of figure out where things are. So kind of according to the new things, we're in a warning for a recession and not really in a recession yet. Also,
It's always interesting, Jeff, too, when you think about it, when we take a look back at all the historical indicators that we've, you and I have looked at for indicators of recession, it's, you know, we always joke about how a lot of that information could be revised, or, you know, not necessarily joke about, but we talk about how there's a lot of revisions in the data, but now we can see how these goalposts are moving in real time, as, you know, the LDI has typically been a pretty good indicator of past recessions. Now we're kind of getting some insight into possibly why.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, things have changed. The economy is not stagnant. You know, we're much more service oriented now than we were back in the 1980s. So maybe your recession signals need to change. But it's interesting that they're doing it like in, I mean, obviously they want to do it in real time to try to give people a real time signal. But it does kind of gives you the indication that maybe the signal isn't really worth watching until after the recession. And then you can kind of see where it was and kind of change the weights or change the way they calculate it to give you a better signal.
That's a good point. It's just like the hindsight, foresight portfolios that we're talking about there.
This would be a lot easier if we knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, if only.
All right, let's get to Fed speak for the week. I'm going to hit four pretty similar Fed speakers out here. Williams was out this week saying, quote, "I definitely don't feel urgency to cut interest rates." Let's see, Mester was out saying, quote, "I think eventually interest rates will need to be lower at some point, but the timing of that is driven by the economy." And she also said that the Fed will likely cut rates at some point. And previously, in her previous speeches, she's used the quote, "this year" language. And so she's kind of taken that out of her lexicon, at least this week she did. Bostic, he said that he thinks the timing of the first rate cut will be, quote, "the end of the year," and that he's comfortable being patient. And then Kashkari also wants to be patient, and he thinks that the first rate cut potentially may not be appropriate until next year. So all four of these Fed speakers, since we've seen the economy stay hot, we've seen inflation pick up higher than they were expecting, being very patient and really kind of pushing back the start of the rate cut cycle. And when you look at it now, there is a 2.6% chance that the Fed cuts at their May 1st meeting. We're at 16% chance, or 18% chance. Sorry, I got to add those two together. 18% chance that they cut in their June meeting. And then we're at a 50-50 here for their July meeting. And if they do cut in July, it's looking like we get another one there in November. And we're only pricing in 1.5 rate cut, or the market's only pricing in 1.5 rate cuts this year. So a long way from that six rate cuts that, Sam, that you mentioned earlier that we were seeing at the beginning of the year, pushing everything back and you know, starting much later and going to take a lot more time for the Fed to really get around to cutting rates that much. And then interestingly, Sam, I know we talked about it 2 weeks ago on the TGA, when we were talking about TGA and duration. And now that tax day is over, finally, one of our guys kept on calling it happy tax day. And for us, we're like, it's not happy. You're paying into the government. But it's interesting that money market funds were lost about $112 billion during this week, and the TGA jumped by about $200 billion. So, you know, we were talking about how that it is beneficial, or the TGA grows on tax day or during tax week, and the numbers bear that out, whereas it kind of draws down over time as people get their refunds and they try to get the refunds earlier, especially when, you know, you get paid to hold cash these days. So it was just interesting to see that number, or that idea did work itself out this week.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much lined up almost picture perfect here.
Yep. So with that, let's move on to the things to keep an eye on for next week. Looks like it should be a pretty short week, Sam. Do you want to hit the highlights?
Yeah, so we've got the PMI data that comes out from the S&P Global. Right now, when we take a look at the estimates for the manufacturing side, it's pretty much expected to come in pretty much flat to where it was prior. I'm seeing an estimate of 52.0 versus 51.9. Similar level on estimate for the services side at 52.0 versus the prior print of 51.7. And then when we take a look at it here, that happens on Tuesday, April 23rd. The next day on Wednesday, we get the durable goods order, which is expected to jump to 2.9% on the month-over-month basis versus the previous print of 1.3. And then when we take a look at it and strip out the transportation part of that, so for the durables, that's expected to remain flat at 0.3%. On Thursday, we have a a pretty big print for coming out, and that's the the advanced estimate for the annualized GDP for the first quarter of 2024, and that expected to be a strong print there at 2.5%. It's down versus what the previous quarter for the fourth quarter of 2023 came out at 3.4, but I would still call it 2.5% estimated quarter over quarter print annualized at 2.5, still noteworthy and still quite positive. And then on Thursday, we'll have the initial jobless claims and continuing claims. Nothing really been much to talk about there in the past few weeks, just going back for the last, even I would say, 6 to 12 months, it's pretty much just been within the trending range over that time. So unless there's a breakout, that may just be nothing to see here. But then on Friday to close out the week, beginning April 22nd, we do have the host of data that is important, especially if it does surprise, and that's going to be the PCE data. Right now, the expectation is for year-over-year PCE on the headline or the deflator to come in at 2.6, up slightly from for the February number of 2.5%, and then year-over-year core is expected to drop in a little bit at 2.7%, down from 2.8% on the year-over-year basis. And then also enclosed within that same host of data, we get the personal income and spending as well, with income expected to pop up a little bit over previous month to come in at 0.5%, up 20 basis points from the previous period. And then spending there is expected to drop a little bit, down to 0.6% from 0.8% in February. So we'll see how all that data shakes out. But as we were talking there, Jeff, pretty important data, especially with the first advanced print for first quarter GDP, as well as this PCE data. Especially with the PCE data, that's expected to just kind of come in expectations, as we'd have pretty much all the data that's necessary to formulate that. That data print through CPI and PPI, which came out a week or so earlier. But unless there's any surprises there from a beat or a miss, I think it's likely to not move the market, but that could be a bold statement there.
Yeah. Again, for those of you that were expecting or hoping for that, the recession in the first quarter, you're not going to get it, with that 2.5. And then Mark put in here something interesting. I thought that was that, we'll have 3 months in a row, if we kind of compare, Powell moved away from comparing the short-term annualized numbers, but we'll continue to do it. And 3 months, if you take core PCE and take the three-month annualized number, if it comes in as expected, it'll be above 3%. And then if you can kind of compare that to the second half of 2023, those numbers were sub 2% on core PCE. So interesting that the last mile, that slowdown, and kind of why the Fed is been given pause in terms of their rate cuts is because they can't start cutting rates if core PCE is going to kind of hang out at this 3% level.
Yeah, that's probably explains a lot of the, it's interesting. I didn't really catch people calling the December 13th meeting, the presser there, when Powell first came out and said that they're thinking about cutting rates as a pivot, at least not in those strong terms, at least, but in the most recent pivot where Powell came out and said that, it may be too early to think about cutting rates, just given the pace of inflation that we've seen over the last few prints. And it certainly seems like he was able to put two and two together, or one and one together, I guess, with the CPI and the PPI data, at least the economists that gave him the early look. So, with that, looking at these shorter period annualized trends, it certainly seems to point to that fact.
Yep. I guess that should wrap it up for this week. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks everyone, as always, for listening to us today, either on the, the Space X Spaces Live, or, picking us up on the X After, or even on your favorite podcast platform. But don't forget, you can always hit us up with a suggestion for the topic of the week, or if you have any comments or suggestions, you can reach us at the X at D-Line Minutes, or on email at minutes@doubleline.com.
Our website is doubleline.com. YouTube channel, youtube.com/doubleline capital. We have Jeff Sherman's fixed income webcast from earlier this week up already. It's titled Disinflation, Reflation, Bonds for Both. We saw the average watch time has been like 12 minutes. So those of you that are watching, you know, maybe go 15, get that average up a little bit. And we have a new blog post in on the LinkedIn, the Between the Lines blog post on inflation divergence. So as we talk about inflation and PCE and CPI and compare that to the rest of the world, it'll be interesting to see or kind of if you're interested in that, you should read that blog post. But I hope everyone has a great weekend out there.
Yeah, thanks, everyone, and good luck out there.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents Double Line's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of Double Line. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from Double Line, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither Double Line nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. Double Line is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any Double Line entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any Double Line entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, Double Line Capital.